Let There Be Light. From Flashbangs and Frag Grenades. By Calchexis. Read by Sam Gabriel. Based on League of Legends by Riot Games. Chapter 10. Blind. Billowa was in a flurry of activity, with men and women running to and fro carrying as much scrap as they could reasonably hold, or otherwise transporting tools or water to the worksite. Lux watched it all with an air of amusement tinged with admiration. Zonites were industrious on a level that should have had Noxus green with envy. All it took was the proper motivation. It shouldn't have surprised her, though. There was something to be said for having an entire population capable of repairing their own tools and habitations. There wasn't a single Zonite who didn't know their way around basic tools, and most of them were far more proficient than that. Fixing things was something that Zonites learned from the cradle as if they were born with a socket wrench at hand. That meant that the orphanage, or whatever Jinx wanted to call it, was practically flying up. Even more surprising was that Jericho had taken the role of de facto foreman of the construction. The old cook was surprisingly handy and clearly knew his way around large projects. It made Lux wonder what he used to be. He was a Bilgewater native, that much was obvious. Almost every Salaki was, since that island chain was their ancestral home. He was also old for a Salaki. They could live upwards of a century and a half, give or take. And he must have seen the whole of the Pirate King Gangplank's reign and then some. It also meant that he was reliable as death and taxes, so Lux was happy to let him take the project over. That wasn't why she was moving through town. Today she was heading towards the rim of the outlet, where Billowa met the chasm. There were plans to be made and issues to address beyond Renata Glask's plans of conquest and rebellion. The rim was alive with shipments coming in from all over the adjoining wars that had begun to loosely ally themselves with Billowa. Already representatives from the various townships closest to their little enclave had begun arriving to negotiate protection, taxation, tithe, and trade. Amidst all of that bustle and hustle were seven figures with hoverboards strapped to their backs, all clad in long heavy coats and masks to ward away the poisonous air of the city they flew through.
"Echo!" Lux called out, raising a hand over the crowd. "Here! I'm over here!"
Echo's owl-masked face looked up at her as the crowd parted around her, and Lux sheepishly lowered her hand as whispers of Lady Light began passing through the crowd. He moved, and his firelights moved with him, and Lux met him with a grasped forearm and a ready smile.
"Lady Light,"
Echo said, and the mechanical crackle that the mask made of his voice failed to hide the wry amusement in it.
"Good to see you again, crazy girl."
"Good to see you, too. How are the firelights holding up?" Echo shrugged.
"We've been worse, but we've also been better,"
he said.
"It's just like we thought. A month into that announcement, the food trade from topside has slowed to a crawl. Grime and Speech's baronies have been hit the worst. There are already riots."
"We suspected that would happen," Lux admitted.
"Yeah,"
Echo replied gravely.
"Doesn't make the people caught up in it any less dead."
Lux nodded silently before turning and nodding for him to follow her. Echo and his firelights moved in her wake, their masked heads on a swivel as they moved through Billowa proper. Some of them, she supposed, had never actually been to the township before. Or if they had, it had been before Jinx had taken control of it. Ever since Jinx had settled in, things had gotten markedly better. Her nature as a tinker meant that if something wasn't working, she would find it and fix it. It wasn't out of a sense of altruism, either. It was more of a compulsion. Sometimes she'd wake up in the middle of the night with her head cocked, declare that something was fucky, and then disappear for 6 hours to fix a jittering filter fan halfway up Billowa's west wall. But Lux wouldn't have her wife any other way. It was all a part of her admittedly strange charm. Besides, compulsions were more reliable than altruism anyway.
"You're safe here,"
Lux said, looking over her shoulder at the firelights as they passed through the main square. "There are no enemies in Billowa."
"They still haven't found you?"
Echo asked. "Not yet," Lux replied. "This place is too deep inside of Zaun, and the pipeworks leading here are a labyrinth. Same with the chasms."
"That'll change eventually,"
Echo pointed out. "I know. Lux wasn't exactly looking forward to that day, but depending on how the war went, it would eventually come to Billowa itself. Eventually, they would have to start fortifying, hardening the borders and raising defenses along the rim in case of an aerial assault. That wouldn't come for a good while, though. For now, the township was still a tavern, deep enough in Zaun's belly to avoid any possible Piltoven traffic, and too well hidden to permit any spies. Echo moved up beside Lux as they left the square and said,
"So how's the orphanage coming?"
There was a quiet laugh behind his voice, and Lux shot him a faint grin. "The foundation is set and the frame is already built," Lux replied. "They're working on the interior floors and walls now. Our timeline says a week and a half before it's livable. 2.5 before all the utilities are hooked in." A low whistle came from one of the firelights behind them. It was impressive by any standard. It certainly helped that work never stopped. There wasn't a single Billowati who wasn't chipping in something. Even if it was just a few hours of work at night, how Jericho was organizing it all, she wasn't sure, but then again, that was why she had left it up to him. She didn't need to know.
"That's good,"
Echo said, sounding genuinely relieved.
"We've taken in way more than we can handle. Those kids can't stay with us forever. There isn't enough space."
"I know," Lux said, putting a hand on his shoulder. "Jinx is handling it. But that's not why you wanted a meeting, is it?" Echo shook his head as he stuck his hand into his voluminous jacket and pulled out a thick folder which he passed to Lux. Lux opened it and began leafing through the contents, and her eyebrows scooted up towards her hairline with every page. It was shipment details from a Piltoven transport company that had been sealed by council authority. More important than that, though, was what they were shipping.
"Grain," Lux said quietly. "Processed meats, dried fruits."
She looked up at him in disbelief.
"Echo, where did you get this?"
"Warwick left it with us a week ago. Damn near scared the life out of my scouts and dropped on top of us, too,"
Echo said, then added,
"He claimed that Vi gave it to him."
Lux narrowed her eyes at that name. Jinx had made her promise not to kill Vi, and she intended to keep that promise. It didn't make the memories of what the woman had done to Jinx's hand any easier to swallow.
"Can I safely assume you vetted it?" she asked.
"Naturally,"
Echo said.
"We spent the last week doing long-range scout runs, and near as we can tell, that info is the real deal. It's not the only storage point, not by a long shot, but that's a lot of food, Lux. If we could get even a fraction of it..."
It would solve a lot of problems really quickly, and that appealed to Lux's logistical sensibilities. How to transport it, though? That was a bigger question. They couldn't just park an airship next to the place and load it up.
"Jinx needs to know," Lux said.
"If anyone would have an idea, it would be Jinx. Come on." She quickened their pace through Billowa up to their home, and Lux came to a stop in front of the door and the note that was tacked to it. It was in Jinx's crabbed and spidery scrawl, and it read simply, "Gone to church."
"Right," Lux muttered,
then turns to Echo and said,
"Sorry, Jinx went walkabout."
Echo shot a look at the note, then asked,
"Church?"
"Don't think too hard about it," Lux advised wanly as she led them back down the hill towards the chapel.
There have been some additions in the last month. Extra wings have been added to make living space for a trio of actual devotees of Janna who had come from a ward near the Sun Gates, or more accurately been chased out by a Piltoven task force, and sought refuge in Billowa by, in their own words, following the divine wind. They claimed upon arrival that Janna had directed them there for safety, which had been doubly suspicious, but neither Lux nor Jinx had found any actual reason to turn them away. Their addition to the township had turned out to be helpful since all three of them proved to have had some kind of medical training. It had resulted in the chapel being expanded into something almost like a hospital, albeit with horribly limited resources. Still, it was better than nothing. Lux approached the chapel doors and was surprised to find them closed. She held up a hand, signaling Echo and his people to stop, then approached the door cautiously before cracking it open and peering inside the dimly lit nave. Chimes rang at the edge of her hearing, and underneath the ringing was the sound of a voice muttering as if in conversation. She managed to pick out a shape sitting hunched near the altar. It was clearly Jinx, but something felt off. A hand settled on her shoulder, and Lux turned to glare onto Echo, who was pulling off his mask to reveal a worried expression as he said,
"Is she okay?"
"She's fine," Lux said. "Just stay here, okay? Sometimes she has bad days, that's all. She was fine this morning, but things can change."
"Right,"
Echo said flatly as he stepped back. Lux chose not to question his tone. She had more important things to worry about at that point. Instead, she slipped into the chapel and shut the door behind her. It clicked loudly enough that Jinx ought to have heard her clearly, but she didn't react. She didn't stir or move at all. She just stayed cross-legged on the floor, mumbling in what sounded like Gutlao, except Jinx couldn't parse any of the words. It was almost like a different language spoken in the cadence of Gutlao.
"Jinx," Lux said softly. "Are you all right?"
The muttering cut off like a snapped thread, and she slowly turns to look over her shoulder. Her left eye fixed on Lux, but there was something wrong with it. She could swear the eye was blue. Then she blinked, and those springberry eyes were right where they belonged. And Jinx animated suddenly, leaping to her feet and turning to flash that rictus grin at Lux as she said,
"Hey, Blondie, what's cooking?"
Jinx, what are you doing here?"
Lux asked rather than answering. Jinx shrugged.
"You know, just felt like coming here, that's all."
Something about that rankled, and she turns to stare up at the tall, stained glass depiction of Janna. Being from Demacia, Lux was no stranger to the worship of great spirits. The Temple of the Protector was one of the foundational structures of High Silvermere, after all. There was no shortage of stories about certain desperate visitors to the temple feeling the grace of the Protector suddenly coming upon them, and there were even eyewitness accounts of things that could only be explained by divine intervention. The question here was, of course, if divinity was intervening, then what were they intervening in and why?
"Blondie?"
Lux turned back to Jinx.
"Are you sure you're okay?" she asked. "You're not losing time again, right?"
"Nope."
Jinx shook her head.
"Why?"
"Who were you talking to?"
Jinx started, trailed off as she frowned and looked down and around herself. Lux knew what she was looking for, her guns. Even after her memories had been brought back, she still talked to her guns. The presence of her memories didn't exactly repair whatever had happened to her mind so much as it had, near as Lux could tell, stopped it from getting worse. Lux was fairly certain that Jinx had always had something of a broken mind, though. So yeah, she still talked to Pow Pow and Fishbones, mostly getting in brief arguments with them. Neither of them were here, though, and that was strange in and of itself, since Jinx rarely went anywhere without them. The fact that she'd been talking to something or someone without her usual triggers around didn't bode well.
"I don't know," Jinx said. "I just feel like talking, you know?"
She turned to look back at Lux and shrugged.
"You ever just feel like talking?"
"Sometimes," Lux said cautiously.
"What were you talking about?" At that, Jinx's face contorted somewhere between a rictus smile and a frown, and she walked over to the steps in front of the stained glass, sat down, and hung her head.
"I don't know what I'm doing, Blondie," she said quietly. "It's like I'm building the biggest bomb in the world. A bomb the size of a city, you know? Except it's not supposed to blow up. It's all ticking and clicking parts, timers and clocks. But it's counting up, not down."
Lux sat down beside her and put an arm over her shoulders.
"What's the difference?"
"Only something counts down and eventually stops,"
Jinx replied.
"It stops, and then it pops. Or when it's counting up, you never know when it's going to stop. You don't know if it's going to stop."
"And that's what you were talking about?" Lux asked.
Jinx just shrugged.
"I guess," she said quietly. "Just, I don't know what I'm supposed to do. I'm not my dad. I'm just a Jinx."
"You're not a Jinx," Lux said as she sidled closer and laid her head on her wife's shoulder.
"You're the Chem Lord of Zaun. And you're not alone, okay? Got me and Echo, who's waiting outside, by the way, and everyone in Billowa. We're all here to help you.
What if I blow it all up?
Jinx whispered. You won't. Lux leaned in and pressed a kiss to Jinx's cheek. And Jinx turned suddenly to capture her face in both hands and met her lips. The kiss was desperate and searing, and Lux melted into it. Jinx wasn't the first terrified person to seek some measure of solace in a chapel. She wasn't the type of person that Lux had expected to do so. But then people did strange things when pushed to the edge. And Jinx was almost constantly riding that edge. Things were more tenuous now than they had perhaps ever been in the troubled city of Zaun. And Jinx was right at the center of it all. It broke Lux's heart to see her love weighed down. It wasn't Jinx's way to carry weight like that. That was probably one of the reasons why Glask had chosen Jinx to serve as Chemlord. She was the one person at that table that Renata Glask could be certain wouldn't want to keep the title. In fact, Jinx likely couldn't be rid of it fast enough. Jinx was the one person that Glask didn't have to compete with. But the trade-off of that was that now the whole city was looking to Jinx as their savior. The average citizen didn't think of her as just a big piece of a much bigger machine. They thought of her as the one with the hand on the lever. It also meant she would be to blame if anything went wrong, and that was a lot of pressure. It was pressure and responsibility, two things that Jinx had never wanted, nor seemingly ever handled particularly well. "Everything will work out okay," Lux said softly as she drew back and pulled Jinx into a hug. "We'll make it work." They had to. There was no other choice. A quiet knocking came at the door to the chapel. And Lux sighed as she looked up and said, "Come in, it's fine." Echo stepped gingerly inside, pausing only to look around the place. It had certainly gotten bigger since the last time he'd been there, and it was only set to grow with the spiritual needs of the expanding population.
"Hey, little man," Jinx said as she sat up. "What's up?"
"Got word from an old hound," Echo said, holding up the folder he'd shown to Lux. "Courtesy of your sister." Jinx raised an eyebrow, then got up, trotted down the stairs, and snatched the folder out of Echo's hand to start leafing through it. Her eyes snapped to and fro across the pages, devouring the information like a hungry dog on a piece of meat.
"We vetted it," Echo said. "It's the real deal."
Lowering the papers, Jinx looked up at Echo and said,
"Okay, and?"
Echo raised an eyebrow.
"What do you mean, and?" he asked. "We need to hit the storage and the firelights can't do it alone. We need backup to bring the food into Zaun."
Jinx let out a bark of laughter as she shoved the folder back into Echo's hands.
"Yeah, good luck, little man. I'm crazy, but even I'm not that crazy."
Lux saw her own surprise neatly mirrored on Echo's, and she turned to Jinx.
"We can't survive without more food, Jinx," she insisted. "We need a supply."
"Yeah, except that crap is topside," Jinx said, gesturing upwards. "How do we bring it down? Toss it into the fissures? Might as well just blow it up."
She paused and looked thoughtful for a moment, then turned to Echo and said,
"If you want to blow it up, I'll lend you some bombs."
"No!"
Echo took a step forward, bristling. "I ain't blowing up food, Jay. We're bringing it to Zaun."
"How?"
Jinx snapped as she shoved Echo back.
"You got a plan? Because I don't know if you've noticed, but I don't really do intact."
"Victor," Lux said. "He helped build the hex gates, right? Do you think he'd be able to rig together something similar? It doesn't have to go two ways, and it doesn't even have to last. It just has to work."
Jinx paused at that, then carted her fingers through her hair as her eyes began darting back and forth as if she was reading something in front of her. It took Lux a moment to remember that although her specialty was explosives, Victor wasn't the only Hextech genius in Zaun. Jinx had famously reverse-engineered the earliest Hextech prototypes into stable and functioning weapons. So when Jinx didn't immediately shoot down the idea, Lux knew what her answer had to be.
"It's possible, isn't it?" Lux asked more gently.
"Old Lady Glask is moving the timeline up," Jinx said rather than answering. We just gotta hold out till the Sun Gate. We can take the Sun Gate and then...
People are starving now, Jay, Echo argued. They can't wait till Mark's End. Folks need to eat. Billowa might be all right, but the rest of Zorn is dying.
Jinx, I hate to disagree with you, but Echo has a point. She put a hand on Jinx's cheek and turned her face until that lovely springberry gaze was on her. If Zahn is going to be fighting fit for this war, we need more food. Jinx was wringing her hands as she started pacing, and it was gut-wrenching for Lux to see. She hated arguing with Jinx, and she could see why Jinx would be reticent to act here. It was a risk, and it was absolutely outside of Jinx's wheelhouse. Still, if Zahn was going to survive the war, it needed every edge that it could grab hold of. And in this case, that amount of food could supplement the rations for half a dozen wards. If only they could get their hands on it.
I don't know, Blondie, Jinx mumbled. I don't like it.
I don't either, but I think we have to try. Lux took Jinx's hand, then said,
Will you please try? For me.
That was unfair, and Lux knew it, but it worked. That line would probably always work. Jinx deflated, then nodded before looking up to Echo and saying,
Yeah, fuck, fine, we'll try it. Go talk to Victor, tell him to meet me here, okay?
Relief flooded through Echo's corded frame, and he nodded before holding out a hand.
Thanks, Jay. I won't forget this. Yeah, whatever,
Jinx said before gripping his forearm and shaking.
But when this shit goes south, don't crawl up my ass about it, okay?
Whatever you say, Echo agreed with a laugh. With Echo and his firelights gone, Lux was left standing awkwardly behind Jinx, who stood watching their departure from the threshold of the chapel. Her eyes were fixed on some distant point, and Lux wasn't sure if that was a good sign or not. Sometimes Jinx was so distant that it was painful. Other times she was so real that it hurt. It was always worth it, though. So Lux took a step forward and slipped her hand into Jinx's before lacing their fingers.
I'm sorry, Lux said quietly. For what?
For arguing?
Jinx shook her head. It's okay, Blondie, she said. Maybe you're right. I think I'm just scared.
Scared of what? Lux asked.
I don't know.
Jinx lifted her head to stare up and out towards the rim of Billowa and further.
I just got a bad feeling, that's all.
Given the nature of Jinx's dreams, Lux was more inclined than she otherwise might be to give that bad feeling credence. Still, there was nothing to be done about it. Zahn needed its numbers to be kept up. Its population was one of the greatest advantages it had over Piltover. Starvation would cut that population. Weakness would cut it further. Plus, starvation led to death and disease. And Zahn couldn't afford a plague. Food and water would fix that. They just needed a little more time. The interior of the workshop was filled with the sounds of clockwork mechanisms clicking and ticking as the old man looked over the schematics he'd been given for the 100th time. For the 100th time, too, he considered telling the woman who had given him the plans to shove them somewhere that no doctor would ever be able to reach. But he knew that that wasn't an option. Not really. They had too much over him. They had everything over him. All he could do was stare at the schematics and agonize over them before he eventually agreed to their terms. Hanging his head, Corin Revic drew out the small silver locket that hung around his neck and opened it. The young face that stared out at him hadn't existed for years. It was different now. Different and the same. Cast in metal and hextech instead of flesh and bone.
I'm sorry, Corin rasped. You would never have wanted this. I'm so sorry.
A knock came at his door and he scowled as he said, What is it now? The door creaked open and in stepped the monster. Corin had seen many monsters in his day.
He had met champions of the League that were better called horrors. He had walked the low roads of Zaun and seen chemtech and mutant abominations alike. He had never before met a monster quite like this, though. He had never met a monster that was quite so pretty.
"Good morning, Master Revic," Bren said brightly. "I hope you've given our offer a little more thought. Lady Pharos is a patient woman, but you're testing that patience gravely."
If Corrin had one wish beyond his and his daughter's freedom, it was that Ren Gleamspire would stop smiling all the damn time. It was a hideous thing, and he could barely look at it most days, so he didn't. Instead, he kept his head down and his eyes focused on the schematics as he said,
"Promise me that you will not harm my daughter, and that you will allow me to do the maintenance on her body. Promise me that, and I will agree to this aberration of Hextech."
Much to Corrin's displeasure, he could practically hear the horrible young woman smiling wider as she replied,
"Wonderful. I'll let the Lady Pharos know immediately. She'll be so pleased."
As she turned away, Corrin looked back and said,
"Wait, can I see her? Just for a moment, please. I just want to see her."
Ren looked back at him quizzically. That expressive little moo of almost childish innocence turned his stomach. It was the eyes, he thought. Her eyes were so empty. They were like colored glass, devoid of anything human, but fashioned to look as though they were despite that. It was the nearness to humanity that was the most unsettling. Near and yet not.
"I suppose," Ren said after a moment.
Then, unfortunately, she smiled again as she nodded for him to follow. Corrin rose from his desk and followed her out into the hall. The compound they had brought him to was enormous. Where in Piltover it was located, precisely, he wasn't sure. Somewhere near the center, by the sounds of it, though. The closer one got to the oldest parts of Piltover, the more the sound of clockwork was audible. The original city, as designed by the brilliant, if half-mad, Yordle scientist Cecil Heimerdinger, was essentially an enormous clock. Prior to Hextech, the whole city functioned off of a maddeningly complex system of clockwork and geothermal steam engines. The sound was all around him, and had been since he'd arrived, so Corrin could only imagine this must be close to the heart of Piltover itself. He did not dare ask, though. Asking where he was would, he suspected, be construed as an attempt to escape it, and whether or not that was even possible, and Corrin strongly suspected it wasn't, given his age and his captors, it would leave his daughter in their clutches. So Corrin would not have tried to escape, even were he kept in a barn outside of Piltover with the door open and unbarred. It simply wasn't an option. Instead, he followed the monster wearing a young girl's skin through a labyrinth of dark metal halls filled with the sound of ticking and the hum of steam engines. It was getting hotter the deeper they went, and he pulled a rag from his pocket to mop at his brow. Out of curiosity, he made to offer the same to Ren, then stopped as the words died in his throat and a chill shivered down his spine. She wasn't sweating. Turning away from her, Corrin chose not to think too hard on that subject and allowed her to lead him into a section of the complex where people were moving rapidly from one place to another. The faint blue glow of Hextech was all around them, and despite himself, Corrin found quite a lot to look at. They may have been situated in the oldest and most antiquated part of Piltover, but the work being done here was nothing short of bleeding edge. Had he even a fraction of these resources 10 years ago, he might not have had to resort to such drastic measures to save Orianna's life.
"Here we go," Ren said cheerfully. "She's right in here."
Ren gestured to a room marked Prototype Maintenance and frowned.
"Prototype," he said, looking back at Ren. "What prototype?"
"Well, your daughter, of course," Ren replied. "She's completely unique, one of a kind."
I suppose she is, he said,
feeling that chill come over him again.
Of course, but as Lady Pharaoh says, just because something came first doesn't mean it can't be improved, Ran added.
Corrin's eyes widened at the word improved, and he darted forward as fast as his aging limbs would carry him. He burst through the door with Ren following calmly on his heels and stumbled into the midst of several hex technologists who looked alarmed for a moment before Ren calmed down with a raised hand. He had no eyes for them or her, though. Corrin's eyes were fixed on the figure secured to a vertical slab in the center of the room. Wires spun out of the walls like spiderwebs, linking into capacitors that were arranged around the slab like diseased hearts, each one pulsing in sequence. Corrin's mouth was utterly dry as he stared up at her in horror, then looked back furiously at Ren.
What? He hissed. Did you do to her?
We have improved her, came the imperious answer. Lady Camille Pharos fairly glided into the room. She was tall and terrible and could never even for a moment be mistaken for human. Corrin Revic could not tell how much flesh was even left of the woman, but even if she had been wholly blood and bone, he was certain that there would be less humanity in her than there was in his daughter at that moment. In a way, he was grateful for those terrible eyes of hers. They, at least, made no pretensions.
What have you done? Corrin repeated.
Camille came to a stop next to Ren and laid a hand on the young woman's hip in a sickeningly suggestive manner.
Your daughter is a champion of Piltover, and will therefore serve Piltover's interests in the upcoming conflict, she explained.
She is simply being improved towards those ends, that's all.
This is an abomination, he shouted.
No,
Camille replied, unfazed by his outburst.
This is progress.
The text of this story is available on AO3. Music by Dot Matrix. If you would like me to record a story, voice over a character, get in touch using the contact information available on my website, which is located at samgabrielvo.com. And there you can find other stories that I've read, as well as a link to my Discord server, where I record things live for your enjoyment. And finally, as always, thank you for listening.